He had been using a different outsourced accounting firm, and what he referred to as the output was random number generator financial statements.
Where do I put more money into product? Do I put more money into sales? Or do I address the things that make it real uncomfortable at night? Welcome to this episode of the Building Texas Show. I am in Austin, Texas today, enjoying my time with Bart Davis from 512 Financial. Bart, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, happy to be here, Justin. I appreciate the time.
Well, we connected through the Texas Venture Fest and Texas Venture Gala and Forum and great work that is happening across the state. And I'll plug our friends having the Texas Venture Fest in October. If you have one of those in your community, please check it out. But I've really enjoyed getting to know your story, Bart, and the story of 512 Financial. It sounds like it was grown out of a need, and then it just turned into something that was a bigger need than you expected.
Yeah, that's right. We started it about 4.5 years ago now, formally. I say formally because we had been doing the fractional service offering through my co-founder Joel's portfolio previously. But so from 2014 to 21, that's who we did it for. It was for Joel Trammell and his portfolio companies, Packet Design, iGraphics, CM First Group, and then a company called Novi Labs that was out of the leadership from Packet Design. When we exited the two portfolio companies we initially started with for Joel, there was just kind of a realization that, yeah, there's a broader need in Austin, in Texas, in the startup ecosystem overall. And we were, eager to try to fill that need.
The startup ecosystem in Texas is a unique one. I think it's up and coming, and I hate to tell it that way, but when I look at the Texas investor, a lot of that is still going to the coast. And we're starting to see that shift somewhat. But I wonder at times what that has to do with exactly what a fractional leader can help do. You don't want the company to outpace your skill set. And then it's really hard to hire an entrepreneurial CFO, CPA that can understand that early startup system.
Yeah, that's true. I think there is a sort of a misconception that the bigger company someone comes from, the more equipped they are for whatever that might be. Oh, I was a Fortune 500 CFO or a global 1000, this or that. It is so fundamentally different. That those are very talented people, to be sure, but it is so different from what happens at a startup and the skills required to go from a million or maybe less than that in revenue to 5 or 10 or 15. And I think the investors, the operators, the companies that have understood that disparity in what it takes to be a successful large company CFO or controller versus a startup CFO or controller, obviously have better outcomes from my perspective.
Now, you're also in an acquisition period, it seems like. You had a big one last year with HireBetter.com. Are you stepping into the HR space, or is this truly search, or what does that look like? Because HR leadership is an important part of what we talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. So we did have a, whether you call it fractional HR or people ops or people services component to the business prior to any acquisitions. So we had maybe a 5 or 6 person team that served some of our, mostly our existing accounting and finance clients for kind of 2022, 23, 24. And then in 2025, we acquired a company called Austin PeopleWorks first before that HireBetter acquisition that you mentioned. And that really extended what the team's existing capacity was, processing payroll, onboarding and offboarding of employees, performance management, culture initiatives, handbooks, all of the sort of blocking and tackling and strategic components to the people function. And then Hire Better, yes, was it, I won't say strictly retained search, but that is what they were known for. That's the bread and butter, was executive retained search. And the thesis there was really around extending our customer lifecycle and or what we call monetizing churn. Because in a fractional business, you know, as you help these companies scale, they do get to the point where it is time for a full-time CFO, controller, HR leader, whatever it might be. And for the first several years of business, we gave them a congrats and an attaboy and then said, all right, bye, see you later. Instead of, you know, who better to place that full-time CFO or controller than us, who knows the business and knows the CEO and their strengths and weaknesses and knows the marketplace and the vendors and the customers and all that stuff. So that was the thought process behind the Hire Better acquisition.
Well, in the name 512 Financial, I think we know it in Austin. And 512, for those that aren't in Austin, is a famous area code for how we describe Austin. But you're serving a national audience, I would say, with HireBetter.com and your other services as well. Texas is growing. What's making that Texas market unique from the rest of the country?
Yeah, I mean, I think, to your point about growth, I don't know every market, obviously, but I think that in several instances over the last 5 years where overall the economy has seen contraction, that the Texas economy has continued to grow. And I think Central Texas in particular, but not only, sort of in the Austin, San Antonio region in particular, just what is considered Austin just continues to expand, every year. And that it comes in all forms and fashions. It does come in the big companies with, Elon bringing some of his companies here, with Samsung opening new facilities and Apple and et cetera. But then there also is that startup and sort of entrepreneurial ecosystem that does seem to sort of thrive and grow here as well.
I was amazed. I saw a headline today. San Antonio was named the most entrepreneurial city in the country. And I believe it, but you have to look hard to find it. And that really is a testament to the leaders I think you would work with that are rolling up their sleeves, building their companies, and they're coming to you when they get to a point. And I would say that's probably Series A timeframe, where they're looking for that level of fractional talent.
Yeah, the inflection point changes based on industry, based on needs or expectations of lenders, investors, CEOs. So I think there's not a specific, you're right. Series A is a pretty common sort of jump off point, but we've entered bootstrap businesses that need, that would like to raise someday. We've entered seed stage. We've entered at B or later, when maybe they get the first time that they've got an audit requirement. Or something, something else regulatory, or something that the lenders or the investors require that they haven't had to report on before. But yeah, it is. I mean, that inflection point can happen sort of irrespective of fundraising. Sometimes it's it's just a pure business operational need. And in general, most, from what we have seen, founders and CEOs, they want to spend as much as they can on the product, on go-to-market, and as little as they can on accounting, finance, back office. And I get it. It's not sexy, but it is very necessary. So
it's strategic too. I mean, a good system really helps bring the value up. And if I had to guess, you saw that in your early work starting the company with portfolio companies. I mean, having that regulatory presence, having risk reduction in place that a CPA or a CFO can give you, really does enable you to get the full value or a multiplier on what you're doing on the product and development side.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, the way that this all started for me and for 512, like I said, was coming to work for Joel back in 2014, and I won't name the outfit, but he had been using a different outsourced accounting firm. And as the lead investor and board chairman of these two businesses, what he referred to as the output was random number generator financial statements. Okay. from a company that's a lot bigger than 512 Financial is, but you know, and this is not to say that that entire company can't do quality work, right? It might have been a specific person who was having a bad year or who knows what, right? But yeah, so they were at a stage where he had an exit, at least somewhere in the roadmap. It wasn't imminent, but it was at some point in time, as the lead investor, he was going to want to not be the lead investor anymore and have some sort of successful outcome there. And if he had attempted to do that with the, you know, financials in the position that they were previously, it would not have worked. Certainly not to the extent or valuation that he did eventually get in 2018 and then 2021 with that second company. So you're spot on with that.
Well, and I say it for the small business leaders, the entrepreneurs that are at that stage where do I put more money into product? Do I put more money into sales? Or do I address the things that make it real uncomfortable at night? Because I think that's often that inflection point in the individual journey to say, I've got to start investing in better reporting, better compliance, better efficiency for employees. There's so many things that run through that CFO seat that are critically important to culture, product, quality, sales. But they're secondary or tertiary because they're just not sexy, as they say.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think there's also a lack of understanding around what is the right amount of investment for that function. So what we tell folks, what we typically see for our clients is that they're spending 2-4% of their top line revenue on the accounting and finance function, depending on complexity and depending on, you know, transaction volumes and things of that nature. So I point that out because, like, at one point in time, we had a client, say they were probably doing roughly $15 million in revenue. And at one point they came to me and they said, like, hey, Bart, we're spending an awful lot on the accounting and finance function with you guys. Like, can we do something differently? And I sort of politely pointed out that, well, look, if you look at the number any individual month and what that means annually, I think it came out to something like $250,000. And yeah, like, that's not a small number. I'm not trying to pretend that that's not real money. But if you kind of apply, think about it through the lens of that rule, you know, 250,000 out of 15 million, that's actually, they're actually kind of getting by pretty inexpensive there. And so, so yeah, it's just, you know, what, just because it's a big or a small number, it's all kind of what is it relative to and what are you getting out of whatever that spend is.
And that shifts industry to industry. It also makes a difference when you're going for grant or you're going for any type of public funding. That is a difficult task if you don't have a financial background and you don't have good organized documentation of your business. And we're going to harp on it because that's what a good CFO is leading. That's what your CPA firms will talk about as well. And I really do believe that's the growth for these individual entrepreneurs and leaders to sit back and say, yes, now is the time to invest. And I would encourage them to invest early in that organization and compliance arm, because when they do open up public funding, when they see those opportunities for growth, you got to be ready. It's not something you can say, oh, well, I'm going to go hire someone now to get ready. You'll miss the opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, it's interesting. I think you mentioned having talked to my co-founder, Joel, at one point. You know, he did something the first time he went and raised significant money. He did something that I think is somewhat counterintuitive, maybe, to this conversation that we're having, which was his first two hires, other than he and his wife had been kind of, you know, bootstrapping this business before raising capital. And his first two hires were a controller and an HR leader. Right. You know, before he hired out the product team, before he hired out the go-to-market team. And I think that is kind of counterintuitive, but he did and does to this day, you know, recognize the value of having a clean house in that area. So, you've got to weigh, everything is important, right? In terms of opportunities to grow the business. And so it is a fine line, but I agree. I think those who invest in it earlier than later would typically say that was not a mistake.
And then the idea of fractional is new to a lot of people. And I like the model. I think it's a great fit. It gives you a lot of diversity in talent and diversity in risk lenses. But sometimes people want to say, oh, I got to go hire someone outright. I need to make them a W-2 employee. They've got to come in. They're going to be my right-hand person. But I don't know that that's depends on your business, but fractional is really gaining in popularity. And I have to believe that's because of the result that you're seeing.
Yeah. And I think, you know, to your point about, look, it's hard to find one person that knows how to do all of the things. And so if you have, you know, $100,000, $150,000 to spend on this function, you could hire one person, or you can hire a fractional CFO to own the model. You can hire a fractional accountant to own AR and AP. You can hire a fractional HR person to make sure that your people are being treated right and that you're compliant and all of those things. And all of that combined might be what you would have spent on that one person, but now you've got specialized talent and you're not, you know, as I call it sometimes, bringing a bazooka to a knife fight,
yeah.
Right? Because we get asked all the time, hey, I think I need a fractional CFO, or I need a CFO. Okay, what do you need them to do? Well, I need them to close the books and I need them to pay my vendors. And like, well, if you want to pay a CFO for that, you can, but I would advise paying, you know, 20% of the cost of that for a staff accountant instead.
Right.
And again, that, you know, that fractional model sort of allows you the opportunity to drill in on areas of focus and expertise, instead of sort of a generalist, we'll call it.
Well, and there's a time and a place to have a strategic CFO come in and look at the landscape and set priorities, but that doesn't mean they execute on every priority. A fractional might say, hey, this is a great opportunity for you to bring in a CPA or those other fractional roles to reduce what they've put in front of you as a leader.
Yeah.
And so I see that as a concern. And then I mentioned W-2 and the 1099 argument always comes up. And so it is a huge risk to have 1099s and treat them like W-2s. Yeah. And I imagine a CFO or CPA would immediately highlight that risk.
Yeah, hopefully. Again, that's something kind of back to the HR services side of things. That's something that we see a lot when we enter a new client on the people side is folks kind of, you know, not intentionally probably, but sort of walking that line a little bit too closely. And yeah, there are pretty meaningful, you know, material risks associated with that. And yeah, some CFOs and accountants are more familiar with that than others, but certainly on the HR side, that's where folks know typically where that line is and where you need to adjust. And you know, it's funny because as a fractional model, like I am, I do hire all of our people internally as W-2. We don't have any 1099 folks, but to your point, then you get sort of the protection of, well, you're not engaging with an individual, you're engaging with a company, and right. And then you don't really have to worry about that. So
that's a good distinction that separates you in the fractional market, that these are W-2 employees. You're not just working a desk and sending somebody to do the job. They come in with a theory, a thesis, and your training and your programs to make sure they meet the day.
Yeah. We've got a pretty robust recruiting process, you know, assessments, several layers of interviews. One of the biggest reasons, in addition to that kind of control factor of making sure that the skills are there, the communication skills are there, the personality fit and culture fit is there, is also just that we don't want folks that are really, really great at accounting, finance, HR, et cetera, to have to be worrying about, you know, where their check is coming from. You know, if, as I mentioned, we lose clients, usually for good reasons, because they're going and hiring full time because they've gotten big enough. But I don't want, you know, Justin to be thinking, oh man, like ABC company just rolled off. Like what, like, am I still going to be able to get paid the same? Or do I have to go sell something? Like, that's not their job. Their job is to be great at accounting or finance or whatever it might be. And so we feel like having the W-2 model at 512 Financial sort of takes that layer out of it and allows them to just focus on, again, what they're good at and in life doing.
You've had a busy 2026. You've personally won some awards in Austin in the ecosystem. And so it's great to see that acknowledgement. But what are you excited about on the backside of 2026?
Yeah, you know, we're hopeful to find another acquisition. to bring into the company, again, to continue to build on the service set, to continue to build on the skills and the culture and all of that, and service the Texas community. We've got some other awards that we're going to go try to get after in terms of some of the fastest growing company and some of the awards within both Austin and the Central Texas region. And, mostly we just want to continue to develop our people, give them opportunities to do what they do best and grow and excel and bring value to our clients.
How are you addressing the AI explosion? Because it's just commonplace today, and I could see it being a really easy answer to say, oh, I don't need a CFO, I can just use Claude. But there is risk, and I would never recommend that thinking for anyone.
Yeah.
So what would you recommend around the AI world?
Yeah, I mean, we could have spent the entirety of the time on this if we wanted to. Look, to me, it's still people first. And it's super important to attempt to leverage this, really game-changing technology, obviously. But to your point, if you say, I don't need a CFO, I'll have Claude build my financial model. We've seen the output of some of that we've inherited, and we know immediately that a human did not build this because it's riddled with errors, and they're errors that a non-CFO would never catch. It's the same thing with a tax return or any number of things. Like, it knows a lot. It knows just about everything, but it still needs context, just like a person needs context when they start a new job. And if not given the proper context, it will make up its own. And so you got to be really careful. So this is not that I'm an AI naysayer, because everyone in the company is using it every day, but it's too... It's kind of like an 80-20 rule. We want to be doing the 20% of the work that drives 80% of the value, and let the AI do 80% of the work that drives 20% of the value. That's what we're trying to do with it.
Awesome. Where would people learn more about 512 Financial, and who should be looking to talk to you at 512 Financial?
You can learn about us at our brand new website, 512financial.com, that Kristen, our CMO and marketing team, has spent a lot of time making beautiful and fast and a very, very great resource. Who should be talking to us? Anyone who feels like they're reaching an inflection point, whether that be, I think I need to raise, whether that be, I don't think I understand what the numbers are telling me enough, whether that be, I'm a little worried. I've got people in new states now, and I'm not sure if I'm doing everything right. So there's not any specific stage other than growing and having an understanding that, hey, maybe the back to the 80-20 thing, maybe as the CEO or as the founder, it is not the best use of my time or skill set to be digging into a collections problem or a state compliance issue, and let folks who both enjoy it and are very good at that do that, so that they can focus on the things that they're really good at.
Well, Bart, it's been a pleasure, and I'm excited to learn more about your company and the way that you're building Texas. But I just have to echo, in the ecosystem in Central Texas, you've already made a big impact and continue to make a big impact and help those startups hitting that next inflection point, hitting that next phase of growth. And we've seen some great exits from the portfolios in Central Texas. And that's exciting for Texas investors, for Texas business leaders. And then it continues to drive interest in the state. So thank you for the way you're building Texas.
So it's just our way to give back and create value. And it's a really fun environment to be part of. So happy to keep building.
Thank you for enjoying this episode of the Building Texas Show. We release a new episode every week, and you can find us across all social platforms. Please like and subscribe on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn.
Thank you to our sponsor, Chisos Boots, and their damn comfortable cowboy boots.